But I'll introduce our final speaker, Colin McCarthy. He is a graduate of UCD and of the University of Essex. His career has taken him to work in the ERSI and in the Central Bank of Ireland, the consulting firm DKM and UCD. He has served on a number of state or semi-state boards, including ESB, the Irish Gas Board, and he is currently on the Dublin Airport Authority. He has undertaken consulting work for the World Bank and for the EU Commission. He's widely published in both technical publications and more layman's ones. He currently writes regular columns for the Farmers Journal and the Sunday Independent. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Now, which gadget am I using here? This one?
No, you press the space key.
Okay. Okay, very quickly, we know that there's some signs of recovery now. The external environment, especially outside the Eurozone, is better. But there really isn't any hard evidence at this stage of a broad-based recovery in the Irish economy. Perhaps it's coming, who knows. There's evidence in ministerial speeches that it's coming, but the CSO hasn't really confirmed that yet. And I call it an L-shaped recovery. And you can see that the really dramatic drop in activity, which I think is the biggest and fastest since the early years of the Second World War, since which period it's kind of really been sideways. There's no presumption, of course, that the output that we reached in 2007 and 8 is somehow going to be reattained unless we decide to carpet Leitrim with houses again. As for the immediate prospects, the central bank bulletin that was published during the week, this bullet point 3, from memory they were putting nominal GNP growth at 3.5 this year and 4 next year or something like that. Anybody who wrote it here, no? Anybody who read it here, don't answer that. So, you know, everybody knows that if nominal GNP grows at numbers like 3.5%, in other words, grows at the nominal rate of interest, then, long run, you're not out of the debt sustainability problem. The domestic disappoint that I don't want to labour in this company, but you have to labour it with a lot of people. Since there is a huge external debt for the system as a whole, not just the government, but the corporate sector, household sector, altogether are externally indebted, and all in effect in a foreign currency, in the sense that in a currency in which you cannot create liquidity, so you're just hugely exposed to liquidity stops. Since that's the case, long-run sustainability means you've got to run a balance of payment surplus for quite a while to retire some of that. You don't ever have to retire all of it, maybe, but you've got to retire quite a bit of it. There was an article in one of the papers before Christmas where they were doing this pre-Christmas consumer boom story, which they do every Christmas. And somebody rang up a wine importer who said that sales of champagne had been doing very well. And the story was, it's a good news story, this means that Ireland is recovering and so on. And it's good for Ireland because champagne sales are up. It's not, it's good for France that champagne sales are up. Another story was that smartphones were shifting rapidly in Grafton Street, which is good news for Korea. But here in Ireland, what we need is a joyless recovery. We need an output recovery that's dominated by export growth, that creates jobs, but does not stimulate a consumer boom or more wasteful investment. So a joyless recovery is what's needed, and we need a banking system to help with that. This is a chart that we used in the report of the State Assets Review. It's a little bit out of date. The blue line is what was meant to happen according to the National Development Plan in 2006. And what was meant to happen was that the economy was meant to grow at a 4.25% rate forever, and the red line is what happened. Actually, what happened is a little bit worse than that, because it didn't rise, it actually went sideways. And the gap between the two for 2013 is 40%. In other words, a lot of the infrastructure plans that were in place when the bubble burst were posited on an economy 40% bigger than what it actually was in 2013. So if you're projecting compound growth and you get a really very sharp drop and an L-shaped recovery, then big gaps open up. There is really no convincing evidence of an infrastructure deficit. You know, have a look at the terminal in Dublin Airport, or try to win at Cork Airport if you really want to have some fun. There's a statue of Christy Ring outside it. There's enough room for Christy to play a match inside it, but when it's busy. And the road network has been more or less, the main interurban road network has been more or less completed. We have surplus power generating capacity, and so on and so forth. So the Bob the Builder mentality, I think, is out of tune with what's actually happened. So let me start talking about banking system. And I suppose everybody's really within the banks and in the Department of Finance and in the supervisory system, everybody's been kind of firefighting for the last year. So I just started trying to think about what kind of banking system would you like to have in due course when the dust settles and when hopefully the economy gets back to normal. But what's happened? Well, a fair slice of the domestic banking system is gone. They've been closed down. And a disappointing number of the foreign banks have withdrawn. Rabobank pulled out, which I thought was more or less pulled out. So it was a pity. Danske have kind of pulled out of the retail business. That means National Irish Bank is gone. And several other foreign banks have that still operate here are operating on a modest scale. It would be terrific if Ulster commit longer term, but we'll have to wait and see. So the balance sheet contraction in the system as a whole continues. I appreciate it's not quite as rapid these last few months. But notwithstanding all that, there are three domestic banks, which we call the guaranteed banks, the three indeed that Greg was looking at earlier on. They had consolidated assets that exceed 200% of GNP in the middle of the year. The central bank now produces a table which is, it's only partial, but it gives some consolidated figures for these three guaranteed banks. What about that? Well, maybe not much, but it's still a lot. You still have a banking system that is a ward of the state, actually and potentially, that's pretty big relative to the size of the tax base. On housing finance, as Kieran showed in his figures, at the bubble peak in 2006, mortgage lending for house purchase, there was a bit of other kinds of mortgage lending, but for house purchase, it reached 28 billion. In 2013, it was around 3 billion, just under 3 billion, as far as I can make out. So there's been a phenomenal collapse, and people have been trying to figure out how many houses would we build per annum in Ireland if things got back to some kind of normality without going mad. And I don't know what Roland thinks about that, but the figures that people come up with are figures like 25,000 or 30,000. You'd need to try and make sure that they're being built where they're in demand as well, which at the moment would mean mostly in Dublin. And it looks as if that kind of build rate would require mortgage supply, maybe 8 billion or a little bit more. I don't know if people agree with those numbers. There's this tiny wrinkle in addition to that. You have a bubble, you have a crash. At the end of the crash, when all the musical chairs commences, all sorts of people own assets who are not appropriate owners for them. So they have to voluntarily or with a little bit of encouragement flog them. and they have to flog them to other people who are viable owners who need credit. So it depends on how you work it out, but you may need, actually, as a bust gets sorted out, you may need a temporary availability of credit to finance the musical chairs that has to happen. But certainly, you need something like 8 billion, or maybe 10, I don't know, long term of supply and mortgage finance. And I don't know how much thought people have had time to give to this in the central bank or in the Department of Finance, but I think it's a problem. More generally, the kind of domestic banking system that we're going to have is a problem, because there's still no centralized Eurozone backstop for bank resolution. So the liability if banks get into trouble remains national. And there's no centralized deposit insurance, which means that capital outflows and so on will continue. Unless Europe is going to become the first monetary union in the world with capital controls, which is not beyond them. You're meant to laugh. So that means that in the absence of centralized deposit insurance, there's also a possibility of national liability for deposits in foreign-owned banks. And I remember some people in exasperation in 2009 and 10 saying, isn't it a bloody pity all the banks didn't belong to foreigners? And we should always remember that the losses were financed by the Exchequer, which they were, but they were also financed by the shareholders in the Irish banks who got wiped out, and the shareholders in the foreign-owned banks, and we shouldn't forget those. And the foreign-owned banks did not walk. They paid up. But they don't have to. And a state in a currency union, which only has foreign-owned banks, will be left holding the baby of domestic depositors if the foreign-owned banks decide to walk. A number of European countries are in that position, inside and outside the Eurozone. So, since the monetary union hasn't been completed with the proper banking union, the domestic governments are holding the baby for the domestic banks, which are in Ireland now, these three, but potentially also holding the baby of the depositors in any foreign-owned banks where the foreign shareholders decide not to play ball. So just having the banks owned by foreigners doesn't really solve the problem. So it does raise the question of whether sovereign sustainability in the long term requires further bank balance sheet contraction. Aside from mortgages, which I think is the biggest concern, finance is also needed for inventory rebuild, trade credit, and there's some wrinkles on that. Working capital, dairy herd is going to expand, and it's going to have to be processed. The multinationals and the large Irish companies, including semi-states, have reasonably ready access to external credit. So it's really households and SMEs that are captive. One of the things that's happening, I don't know if anybody in the central bank has spotted this, I've come across it. Some big Irish companies are beginning to do a bit of informal banking by extending more trade credit than they did to guys who can't get it from the banks and funding it abroad. And some of the big agribusiness companies are doing a little bit of that. So trade credit has gotten mixed up with ordinary commercial bank credit, and all sorts of people are becoming credit intermediaries. I don't think it's very big or anything in the overall scheme of things, but these kind of things do happen. Okay. I want to just run through the three banks. Bank of Ireland's assets are 98% of GNP. These are from the individual balance sheets of the banks, not consolidated. So, everybody thinks that's the least worst of the Irish banks. But its assets are 100% of GNP. Leverage is 17, and I did a little stress test of my own, which was, I said, supposing they lose a further 5% of whatever loans and advances are on their book, well, then the leverage would be 42. So think about that. Price to book is 105%, which is okay. That doesn't bother me. If people who buy and sell shares think Bank of Ireland shares are worth 105% of book, that's all right, I don't mind. They might be wrong, but that's okay. Mortgages and property are 73% of all loans on the Bank of Ireland's book and 52% of all assets. Loan to deposits is still 121. AIB has assets that are nearly as big. Leverage is lower. They've made more, they've reduced their balance sheet a bit more. But it would rise significantly if they lost more money. Price to book is 684%. And this has been spotted in the media. I think I'm right in saying that AIB have 500 billion shares in issue. Is that right? I'm looking at Pat McGarden in particular. I think that's what it is. And the market value of AIB, the market cap, is 60 billion or 70 billion or something. And the government owns 99% of it. So if I was them, I'd ring Davies and start shipping them out. What's happened, for some reason, I don't really understand what's going on, but it looks to me like Egypt's are being parted from their money, and it's kind of not, it's not sensible to permit a small rump of shares to be quoted in what looks like a completely Mickey Mouse market. If the government's too shy to sell the shares, if they lend them to me, then I'll short them for a small fee. Allied has mortgage and property 73% of all loans, which is the same, I think, as Bank of Ireland. And loan to deposits are 106. Permanent TSB is smaller, but its assets are still 28% of GNP, which, you know, in a lot of countries would make it a worryingly large bank. Relative to the size of the size of the exchequer. Leverage is 15. It would rise a lot if they had further loan losses. Price to book is 127, which is all right. Mortgages and property are 99% of all loans in permanent, and they've still a very high loan to deposit ratio. So this is not a new problem. This is a quote, I hate quoting myself, even on the rare occasions when I was right, and it says that in October 2004, these banks had in effect become mortgage banks. A property crash would badly hit their balance sheets. Now, that was in 2004, around the same time, I think, that Patrick Holohan gave a paper to the Dublin Economics Workshop in which he used the phrase, "the lights are flashing red," I think was a precise phrase. And if he'd meant orange, he would have said orange. So the notion that all of this came out of the blue and was a huge shock to everybody is just not true. So what do I deduce from all this? We need mortgage supply and we need clearing banks. Do you need clearing banks that are mortgage banks to the extent that these now are? And I think we really need to think about that, about whether that's the kind of housing finance system we want longer term, and what do you really want the banks to do. Until the mid-80s, the Irish clearing banks did not have big mortgage books, but they became mortgage banks, and they have this huge asset duration mismatch. So it seems to me that one option now is to have a look at models that include not covered bonds, which stay, remain contingent liabilities to banks, but proper mortgage-backed securities that clear off the bank's balance sheets. And I realise the transition to a system like that is not simple, but I think it's on the agenda. Just to wrap up, with SMEs, deposit-funded banks are an ideal vehicle, it seems to me, for SME finance, not for providing equity, of course, but for SME finance, and paradoxically for builders and developers. The three-year kind of loan cycle for housing development used to be regarded as bread and butter business for banks, if you do it properly, as against 25-year mortgages. I think we need to think about what we want those banks to do. Finally, the bigger firms are already accommodated internationally, and perhaps some of the medium-sized firms too will increasingly be accommodated via securities markets as well. Okay, thanks.